Hey everyone, Evan Damerel here, co-host of Locked On Cavs. I'm flying solo today, but I am joined in audio form only by Locked On Pistons host Koo Khalil, where we talk about how both the Cavs and the Pistons were snubbed recently by Bleacher Report ranking young cores under the age of 25. Check out that and more, and check out Locked On Pistons and Koo's work wherever you can. But today's episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by Locked On NBA. Fridays on Locked On NBA, Nick Angstad of Locked On Mavericks and Adam Maris of Locked On Nuggets power rank the week that was in the NBA. Follow the Locked On NBA podcast today wherever you get your podcasts.
Cavs need a three. Sexton works on Irving, trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down. Ground. Here goes Okoro to the bucket, and oh my, Okoro throws it down. 10 seconds to go. Here comes Colin Sexton. Sexton chased by Hill, off to Stevens. Oh my! 45 ticks to go. That shot is blocked by Nance.
Get that big stuff out of here.
Prince knocks down that Harden pass. Garland's there. Garland upstairs for Allen. Oh, look out!
There you go. That's called team ball right there.
All right, joining me now is host of the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is a network crossover for everyone. Koo Khalil. Koo, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great, man. I'm happy to do this. Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, so let's get into it.
Before we start, I have to ask this because there was obviously beef back in the early 2000s, you know, at the end of the, early 2010s, with like the end of the Pistons championship era squad and then LeBron kind of coming into his own. Do you think Pistons fans still hold any hatred towards Cleveland? Because I was talking about it last night on our show, because we're recording this on a Wednesday and this was during the live show, that I remember when Ty Lue explicitly put Kevin Love on Andre Drummond, and maybe that's why Andre Drummond took so many threes in Cleveland, just to get back at him. But is there still any animosity, or do you think the beef is dead?
I think the beef is dead. I remember being a kid. Honestly, my beef was never with LeBron, to be honest. I want to tell you who my real beef was with. It was with Daniel Gibson. I remember being like a seven-year-old watching the Eastern Conference Finals when Daniel Gibson hit, like, I believe, like eight or seven threes in like overtime or like the second half, whatever, and just sent us home with like 30-something points. And that just broke my heart. But outside of that, no one – I didn't really have beef with LeBron. It was more Boopy Gibson who had me depressed.
No, I mean, hey, that's pretty – it's an interesting pick. I mean, I guess it makes sense because Boobie did go off in that one game. But then was that the series where Cleveland then went on? It was the 2007 playoffs where then they were swept by San Antonio, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so it didn't go well from there. Maybe the Pistons would have put up a better fight. But the reason why we're here today is we're way past those eras of the Pistons and the Cavs. Both squads are rebuilding. Your Pistons recently drafted Cade Cunningham with the first overall pick, which, you know, by and far the best player in the draft. I know some people maybe like were trying to make a stink for Jalen Green or Evan Mobley or whatever. And the Cavs two picks later took the best player available in Evan Mobley. But Bleacher Report dropped an article the other day ranking the NBA's top 10 young cores ahead of the 2021-22 season. And I'll just give everyone a quick rundown real quick, starting in reverse order. So at 10-1, we have the Houston Rockets, the New York Knicks, the Charlotte Hornets, the Dallas Mavericks, the Denver Nuggets, the Phoenix Suns, the Memphis Grizzlies, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Boston Celtics, and the Atlanta Hawks. I understand why Cavs fans might be upset, but Koo, how do you feel about this initial list? Like, we'll talk about the Cavs and the Pistons being snubbed in a bit, but how do you feel about this so far?
Well, first off, I think it's kind of weird and unorthodox for them to go under the age of 25. I just don't think that, like, when you think about young cores, I just feel like 25 is like most of these guys probably, if you're talking about 25, usually guys have about 6-7 years, especially with guys coming in 18. 19, whatever. So they have like 6 or 7 years to like really be like getting into their own and coming into their prime. So I don't know if we really should count that as like, at least that's not what I think when I think young cores. I think more of like guys who are like 21, 20, 22, 20, 23, like that kind of thing. Not guys who are in like their 6th, 7th season and are entering their prime. So I feel like that's a little bit of a stretch to call a young core. There are a few picks on this list that, and also a couple of things in order that I question as well. But yeah, that my main takeaway from it off the top is that 25 is a little bit of a stretch to be calling a young core.
Yeah, I'm 28 myself, so I'm already over the hill, and my co-host kept pointing out some games. I'm just like, well, that's the day before I turned 29, and then he points out another game, and I'm like, that's like a few days after I turned 29. He's like, why are you dreading 29 so much? I'm like, well, it's the last year before I'm 30, and then I'll actually feel sick with myself. But I agree. Like, in terms of age, like, Larry Nance Jr. is the same age as me, but I remember a few years ago people were considering him part of Cleveland's young core at 25, and I'm like, are we sure about that? Like, yes, I know he played a few years in Wyoming, but I think it's a little bit of a stretch, at least, to say, like, okay, this guy's been established in the league. Granted, Nance kind of flourished a little bit more in Cleveland because he was encouraged to do things the Lakers told him not to do. But at the same time, like, yeah, I think 22, 23 would be the absolute cap. The only reason I say 23 is because Jared Allen is 23 and he still falls under this rule for Cleveland then. But if we applied that, like, teams on this list you can immediately scratch off are probably, for sure, Denver. Like, I know Jamal Murray is good. Michael Porter Jr. has a ton of upside, but I question how long his longevity is due to his back. And then it feels like they're reaching a little bit because they, like, mentioned Zeke Nagy, Bol Bol, and Nation Highland. Like, I feel like they're stretching a little bit because if they had it their way, they could maybe extend the cap a little bit higher because Jokic is 26, and that makes things a little bit different too. But, like, it's like them, Phoenix, because, like, you have Book, who is phenomenal. He's a part of the NBA Finals team. But, like, Phoenix and Denver would probably be disqualified from this list if we put our rules on this.
Yeah, I definitely – that the team that I was looking at the most about this – Jason Tatum, I think, is still pretty young. But Jaylen Brown is reaching the point where I just don't consider him a young core kind of guy. He's like, getting close to his, like, prime and stuff. So I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. And then also, the other team I'm looking at, Dallas. I mean, I know they have Luka Doncic, and it depends how you want to go about it. Me, personally, I can't argue too much with them putting him in there simply because they have Luka. And if you have Luka and he's under 25 – it kind of, like, it's hard not to put him on the list, but if you really look outside of Luka, they really have nothing else. So it's like, I don't know. It's definitely, there's a few hiccups. Like you mentioned, the Nuggets, even though you did mention Michael Porter Jr., which I think that gets them on this list because he's a pretty good young guy, along with Bobo and some other guys. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, the teams I really have, I'm questioning and really have an issue with is Boston, simply because of the restriction they put on at 25. I feel like that's dumb. So that's why I have a problem with Boston. And then also I have a problem with maybe the Mavericks even being on the list. And then also the Knicks and the Rockets. I question whether they should be on the list as well. And also I think I might put the Hornets higher on this list as well. So
why would you go with the Hornets higher? And I have to ask.
Because, I mean, I'm pretty high on LaMelo. I really like Miles Bridges. Fair. PJ Washington's really good too. I feel like they just have a – the thing is with, like, a lot of the other teams, like, on this list, like, for example, Dallas only has one guy under 25, and I feel like the Hornets just have, like, four or five that are, like, legit prospects under that – not only just under 25, I feel like the majority of them, like, under 23 too. So, like, I feel like they have multiple guys that will qualify for this, not just one or two. So I might put them up. And they also have, like, their franchise guy in LaMelo, so it's not, like, just three or four role players. It's, like, you got the franchise guy, then you got, like, legit pieces around there too that I feel like could get them higher.
Hey everyone, Evan here. I'll be right back with more from my conversation with Locked On Pistons' Coop Khalil. But first, gotta give you a quick word from our sponsor, BetOnline. It's that time of year again, and all eyes are now turning to football as teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 pocket change for Locked On Cavs NFL Survivor Contest, open now at BetOnline. Head to their website and use your mobile device to sign up today to receive a 100% welcome bonus. Be sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo. Make a bet on Thursday, September 9th, season opener between the Super Bowl champion Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys, and if you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using promo code NFL100. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. From football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, do not wait and take advantage of all the great offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts, and don't forget to use promo code LOCKEDON. No, I absolutely agree with that. Like, I'm super high on LaMelo Ball's upside, and I think if you injected truth serum into the Warriors front office, they regret not taking him over James Wiseman at this point, just because, yeah, maybe you have some concerns with the fit because of Steph and Clay, but I think you find a way to make it work just because talent's talent. But yeah, maybe the Hornets are a little low because I like LaMelo too. I like him a lot. I think he was the best player in last year's draft class. I like Miles Bridges too, just because of his potential. PJ Washington, I'm super high on. I like James. I wasn't a huge James Bouknight fan heading into the draft, but if the Cavs were able to acquire an additional first, I think he would have been a fun target as well, just because he's a young sophomore, but like reading he was a sophomore at UConn like was a red flag for me. So I'm just like, oh, he's old, but no, he was a young sophomore. I agree with your Dallas take. I just think maybe it's in a similar vein to Charlotte, but Charlotte should be higher, but Luka's just so good that he pretty much is the young core for the Mavericks. And then it does feel like a reach because they include Moses Brown, Tyrell Terry, and Josh Green on this list. Like, who I like Tyrell Terry a lot, but I think he is a miniaturized, like, hyperactive Darius Garland in a sense. And like Moses Brown, I know, had like an awesome game for Oklahoma City for a little bit. Like, that was fun too, but I just think Luka's the only reason why they're on this list, and maybe that should be a disqualifying factor, but I'm just, I don't know, man. Like, the Knicks are my biggest question, too. Like, I really raised an eyebrow at that. Like, I like RJ Barrett a lot. I like Mitchell Robinson. I like Quick. Toppin's not as bad as people made him out to be, but he has his limitations. But, like, Grimes and McBride feel like a bit of a reach, too. But the Houston one, I think, is where we disagree, just because I'm a bit more of a Kevin Porter Jr. truther. I was a huge fan of his in Cleveland, and I like the fit with him with Jalen Green. And I like Josh Christopher as well. And I think Garuba is an interesting upside pick. And I think Sengun is also an interesting pick as well. I think I'd bump the Rockets a little higher. Then I think I'd knock the Knicks out of this list entirely. And then, yeah, I think your reasoning behind Dallas makes sense. And then Boston, it's just, I think it's similar to Luka, where as well, like, Jason Tatum's just incredible, and he just has the reverse Benjamin Button, where he keeps getting younger. And Jaylen Brown, yeah, like I said, like you said, I think 25 is a weird ceiling for this list, and I think that's how Jaylen Brown qualifies. But like, Robert Williams isn't bad, but I think like Peyton Pritchard and Aaron Nesmith, who might have a more defined role this year with Ime Udoka coaching, but I think that's a bit of a reach too. So you could shuffle that deck around a bit too, but yeah, no, let's shift lanes a little bit though. Let's talk about the Cavs and the Pistons. If you had it your way, let's say if we were just re-ranking this list all together, where would you put the Pistons overall, like in terms of top cores under 25?
So first, let me just say about the Houston Rockets, the thing, and I guess it kind of intertwines what I'm about to say about the Pistons as well. The thing about the Rockets that have me questioning whether they should be on the list is because the reason why I thought the Pistons weren't really on the list is because they have a bunch of guys who are young guys who have a lot of potential, but haven't really proven or like have production to like base that off of. Like, if you're a Pistons fan and you're looking at the core, you're like, oh yeah, we have Killian Hayes who has a lot of potential. You got Hamidou Diallo. Oh, Frank Jackson under 25. He had a really good season. You got Sekou, still has a lot of potential. Like, you have all these guys that you can name, but they don't really have like the production to like match being like a, that's like, if fair. You ask people outside of Detroit, you wouldn't be like, oh, this guy's amazing. But if you ask the people who watch Detroit, they're like, oh, yeah, we see this potential. We see why they can be great. And I feel like that's if that's the reason why the Pistons are on the list, like, then you could do the same thing for me with, like, Houston with Sengun, Garuba, and Christopher, because they're rookies. You haven't seen from them yet. And Kevin Porter Jr. is an interesting prospect for sure, but he also only played 26 games last year. So it's like, if we're doing it off of, like, what we've seen so far and what production we've seen so far, I just, if that's the reasoning for the Pistons being off the list, it makes me question whether the Houston should be on the list as well. Cause I believe like four of their six guys that they were named haven't played yet. And one of the main pieces, I think, is Kevin Porter Jr. He only played 26 games. So I feel like if that's the reasoning for keeping the Pistons off, it makes me question why Houston's on the list as well. But
that's a fair argument. No, as a sidebar, does the Kevin Porter Jr. does the Pistons trading the Kevin Porter Jr. pick to the Cavs haunt you at all?
Yes, I very much. Well, the thing is that I was on draft night, I was there. That's the same draft they drafted Sekou Doumbouya with. And before the draft, I was sitting there with a bunch of Pistons Twitter guys at Buffalo Wild Wings. We were watching the draft, and we all wrote down who we thought we would draft. And I picked Kevin Porter Jr. They didn't draft him. They drafted Sekou, who I am – I don't know if you've seen, but I'm big on Sekou as well. But when Kevin Porter Jr. dropped to 32 and they didn't draft him, then I was like, okay, there must be something wrong with him, and there must be some, like, serious issues going on for him to pass up on him twice. And then they ended up trading that pick to get Davidas Savidis, who's no longer on the team, and then get, like, multiple second-round picks. But they ended up trading to get Davidas Savidis, and he's not on the team. So basically you have nothing to show for it, and now Kevin Porter Jr. looks like he's a legit prospect. So it made sense at that point, I guess, because they didn't want to have a guaranteed contract with the Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, Derrick Rose, Reggie Jackson team. But then also you could possibly say that that shouldn't have stopped you from getting Kevin Porter Jr. if he was going to be this type of prospect. So it's kind of one of those things I look back on just like, what the hell?
Yeah, no, I get that for sure. I think the Cavs essentially trading him to Houston for a top 55 protected second round pick, aka a pick that'll probably never convey at this point, it sticks in the craw of Cavs fans a lot, especially when he was starting to ball out for Houston. But I think your argument's fair too, where you say there's such a small sample size at this time at the Rockets, and you need to see how things are configured with Jalen Green going forward and Josh Christopher. And like, yeah, you're gambling on the upside of this, and maybe the guy who wrote this is a lot higher on KPJ as well. I mean, I was out on the pick entirely at first, and then I watched him play and I'm like, okay, there's a little something here. Then I watched him play for Houston this year and I'm like, okay, now I'm hurting a little bit. But I guess the same thing could be said for Cleveland, because there's some established pieces there, like Jared Allen, who is more of a veteran at this point, which is weird to think. I think he's entering his fourth or fifth NBA season, but he's still so young and still has potential to grow in his game and everything else. Like, he's established, like, that's a good baseline. And then you have Colin Sexton, who I don't think you can properly put a ceiling on. Like I said 2 years ago, and this is what our listeners hold against me for such a long time, as I said, maybe he's a sixth man at his apex. And then he kept kind of shattering the ceiling over and over again. So I'm saying, okay, maybe we shouldn't put a cap on Colin Sexton. But Colin Sexton, I think, is really good. I think he's an elite three-level scorer, and I think he has more of a defined niche in this league. And I think teams are starting to figure, or at least the Cavs, at least, are starting to figure out what his limitations are and what he's truly good at. Darius Garland's a bit of a mystery box for me at this point, because he can't stay consistently healthy. I know his sophomore season was a bit of a coming out party for him, especially post All-Star break and pre All-Star break too. But again, injury concerns are my biggest thing with him, and I'm not 100% committed to say, like, okay, let's put a pin in this and keep going. Like, Isaac Okoro is the same way too. Yeah, he looked sharp his rookie season, but he's super limited offensively. He is a limited shooter. The playmaking upside is a little interesting too. I think the Cavs exploring that as using him as a backup point guard just because of injuries towards the end of last season was fun. And then exploring it further in Summer League was also an interesting development. But I think, hopefully, we're not seeing his limits, but I think since he put up similar stat lines in summer league play, where it's a glorified exhibition, is just, you know, give me a little pause to say that. So it's like that. And then Evan Mobley could be like such a really good player, but he's so thin for a player his size. He's 215 right now, 7 feet. I always tell our listeners that his brother is 235 at USC. So I think if you just kind of follow the breadcrumb trail here, like, he'll naturally get bigger as well, and he'll play into his potential a little bit. Like, but you have to be patient with a player like Mobley, because it takes a while for big men to adapt to this league too. And I think Cleveland trotting out arguably the youngest starting lineup next year in the league, which is the average age, if they go with Garland, Sexton, Okoro, and Mobley, Allen, is 21.5. That's going to limit them a little bit as well. So, like, yeah, they have established players in Sexton and Allen, but there's so many question marks between Garland and Okoro and Mobley that I can't rank them too high on this list. But if you, like, look at a team like New York, RJ Barrett, I liked a lot coming into the draft, but there are some concerns. But I think he's turning into a legit two-way player and a legit player under Tom Thibodeau. Mitchell Robinson I like a lot too, but he has a propensity to foul, and he's really young and raw still. Emmanuel Quickley looked really good last year in New York, because they have a system where it's kind of conducive to guards who can kind of bludgeon teams to death, and Quick is pretty good at that. He's a little bit similar to Colin Sexton, except he's a little more trigger happy from three. And like I said, I like Obi Toppin too, but he has his clear limitations as well, and I think he's going to be buried on New York's depth chart, so we don't really know what kind of player he's going to be. So in terms of, like, the shuffle of it, I think Cleveland, if like you could put them 10 perhaps, or you have them on the outside looking in if you want to put Detroit ahead of them, because I think I said this on Twitter, and this is when you and I were kind of planning this episode a little bit, is like I'm higher on Detroit's core than I am Cleveland's at this point.
I mean, well, I feel like the reason why, I mean, obviously, I think the reason why you'd say that is because of Kate Cunningham, obviously, him on your squad. It changes everything. And that's why I said as well, I tweeted this out, whenever this list came out, like, I think 2 days ago when people listened to this, or 3 days ago, that when you have a prospect like Kate Cunningham, as long as you have competence around him, I feel like that should automatically put you into this top 10 list. That was my original thoughts. Then I went back and thought about it. I was like, okay, you know what? The Pistons do have a lot of guys who just aren't proven right now. And it's hard to like put them. It's hard for me to argue that over guys who have like shown that they're decent players already as a young guy. But going back to the Knicks, like you said, this is what makes me think the Knicks shouldn't be on here. So like RJ Barrett, like we can just go, I'm just going to go through Cleveland and Detroit comparing to RJ Barrett, like the Knicks. So you got RJ Barrett. Is Colin Sexton better than RJ Barrett? Like, I think that's something you can have a talk about. Then you got Kate Cunningham. I think he's a better
that's
prospect.
A legit debate that Cavs fans had for a while, because when Sexton was in trade chatter, they're demanding RJ Barrett back. And I'm like, I don't know. I think RJ Barrett's better, but you can make a case for both. Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah. But basically what I was saying was that, you know, RJ Barrett, Colin Sexton, Kate Cunningham. I think Kate Cunningham, apologies to Colin Sexton, guy. I just think Kate Cunningham is the best prospect out of all of them. I think he has superstar absolutely. Potential. So you got that there. Then you got Mitchell Robinson and Manuel Quickley. I think the Cavs size up there pretty well with Darius Garland, Jared Allen, who I think Jared Allen probably is the best one named right there. You got Jared Allen, Darius Garland, and Evan Mobley, and Isaac Okoro. So I think they're already washing them out of there, the New York Knicks. Then you got the Pistons with Cade. You got Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart, who just made all rookie teams. I think Josh Jackson's still under 25 right now, but you don't have to include him if you're not high on Josh. Frank Jackson's under 25. He had a really good season last year for the Pistons, like a legit scorer. And then also you got, I don't think I mentioned Killian Hayes yet. You also got Sekou Doumbouya. And that will bring me to my next point, is that if you're going to put Obi Toppin on this list, I'm not saying he's a bust, but if you're going to put Obi Toppin on this list as some big prospect, then Killian Hayes 100% should be on that list, because I feel like they're both kind of the same thing. They have a lot, pretty decent potential. I think Killian has more, but both of them had somewhat disappointing rookie seasons. So if we're doing that kind of thing, I just feel like New York really doesn't even size up with the Cavs or the Pistons young core. So I don't really get why they're on there outside the big market kind of thing.
Hey everyone, I'm recording this from the yacht right now. Chris and I are at home in Geneva. That's in Switzerland. A woman just fed me French vanilla ice cream. But I gotta give you a quick word from today's other sponsors, Rock Auto and Built Bar. This episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? They're a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and Rock Auto's prices are reliably low for every customer. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution for your auto parts needs. So, if you're interested, go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in there, how did you hear about us box? They know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at rockauto.com. Did you know that Built Bar has so many delicious flavors? There is something for everyone. When you talk to a Built Bar fan like myself or Chris Manning, they're definitely passionate about their new faves. If you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you're missing out. Coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, hopefully blueberry one day. You know what my favorite flavor is? It's cookies and cream, if you guys are a regular listener, and it's just so good because it doesn't taste like absolute garbage like most cookie based protein bars too. And if you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mix box where you'll get two of each of the 9 flavors. Not only are Built Bar's flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. Check out the macros. They have 17 to 18 grams of protein. The calories range from 130 to 180. There's only 4 to 5 grams of sugar and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. They're amazing, flavors are all healthy and all tasty. Order today and get the grasshopper cookie or raspberry or whatever you like. Built Bar is the official protein bar of the US track and field team. Isn't that neat? So if you're interested, go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKED15. That's LOCKED 15, and you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com. Yeah, no, I think a lot of it's the big market appeal too, and maybe this writer is just super high on RJ Barrett. He literally says critics might hold this as a quantity over quality selection. It's just because I think the Knicks have six players that are under 25, which I just think is a bit of a reach. But to your point, OB's rookie season was disappointing because Tom Thibodeau doesn't play rookies, and he's buried on the depth chart behind Julius Randle, which, you know, was such a revelation for the Knicks last year that why would you play OB Toppin? But would you really call Killian's rookie season disappointing? He dealt with a serious injury, if I remember correctly. He only played 26 games, so I don't think there's enough tape to really say he's disappointing, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I was really bullish on Killian's upside. It kind of broke my heart a little bit when he said he had no interest in being drafted by the Cavs to me during his media availability pre-draft, but I don't know. I'm looking at his per 36, it's 9.5 points, 7.4 assists, 3.7 rebounds. It's not great, but I think he's a little raw. He's young. And I think just playing alongside Cade Cunningham will just naturally make him better. And hopefully, I'm knocking on wood for him, he stays healthy as well.
No, yeah. So you're talking to somebody who, at the beginning of the season, I was a little bit worried about Killian Hayes, and I wasn't as high on him as everybody else. And I've done complete 180, and now I'm extremely high on him. I went back and watched tape on his season. When he came back from injury, he looked much better. I think Killian Hayes has a boatload of potential. He's kind of like what you said with Con Sexton. I don't want to put a cap on his ceiling because there's so many things that he already has established that if he just simply builds off of that, I can see multiple different ways he can become a great player. He's already really good at gaining separation on guys. He has a creative handle and he yanks guys around a lot. I think me and Pistons fans' biggest frustration is that he'll yank a guy around, create an advantage for himself, and then either one, not know he did that, or two, just not take advantage of the advantage he created for himself. And it's so frustrating to see. He'll yank a guy back and have a wide open three. He'll just sit there. And I'll be like, bro, oh my God, just shoot it. And that's frustrating to see. But yeah, was his rookie season disappointing? I think Pistons fans, it's split. I think the injury obviously set it back. I feel like maybe if he wouldn't have never gotten injured, the struggles we're seeing that we saw during his rookie season, he probably would have been able to work out more and maybe get better as the season gone. Because when he came back from injury, he was already 100 times better than he was at the beginning of the season, the first, 7-8 games he played. So I think that it's an argument to be had whether his rookie season was disappointing. I think people outside Detroit looking in, they're just more casual, would say absolutely it was a disappointment. But there's little things to look at that would be he did this well, he did this well. But I feel like majority of people don't really want to hear that. I think that's basically where this article and people, I basically assume that people writing articles like these and people outside of Detroit, they don't really want to hear that kind of stuff. They're going to just say they're more looking at the major statistics and they don't really want to hear me talk about, did you see Killian's passes and some of the reads he made and how he's able to move people around? They don't really want to hear that. So it's just whatever.
No, that's the shame with a lot of these articles. And I think the problem and the unfortunate reality of the situation, these small market teams like Cleveland and Detroit, is not a lot of people are going to be getting up to watch the Pistons and the Cavs play another bad team throughout the league. But if you just do a quick glance at box score stats and maybe some advanced metrics, if you really want to make a compelling argument, the Grizzlies make sense because I think that is literally NBA Twitter's wet dream in terms of a team. And now I'm not envious of their situation because they have to pay all these young players, and ditto for Atlanta. I raised an eyebrow when I saw Atlanta was number one. I get it because I like Trey, I like John Collins, I like DeAndre Hunter, I like Kevin Herter, I like Cam Reddish, I like Okongwu a lot, and I like Jalen Johnson too. You can even include the kid they took out of, oh my gosh, his name's escaping me right now, but it's a point guard that the Cavs were interested too, but they couldn't make a trade happen on draft night. But Like, I like what Atlanta has, but I look at these teams and I say, you know what? I'm also kind of glad I'm not in this situation, because a lot of Cavs fans have been asking us lately, like, okay, well, why can't Cleveland trade for Cam Reddish? They could lightly protect a 2022 first and go get Cam Reddish. Cam Reddish is extension eligible next year, and there's a certain cap you put on yourself too with these young players. And if you start paying for everybody, there's a certain cap you put on this team. So you have to make the uncomfortable decision of who you do and do not want to trade. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not too envious of this position. But before we go, let's do a little back and forth on who we'd rather take between like the key players and the young core for both teams respectively.
Oh, okay. This should be fun.
This should be fun. So we'll go with the 2021 picks first. So it's Evan Mobley versus Cade Cunningham. I think this answer is pretty easy, but I'll ask you about this. I take Cade, but how do you feel about Evan Mobley? Because I feel like you're going to take Cade too, but how do you feel about the Evan Mobley fit in Cleveland?
Yeah, I'll take Cade. With Mobley, I actually think it's pretty interesting. So, I mean, I need to find out what you guys are doing with Kevin Love. Like, I'm very confused about what's going on with his situation. His whole situation really has confused me from the outside looking at, like, the past 3 years.
Like the backup or third string power forward in the backup center and play 20, 25 minutes a night next year. They told him they're benching him for Mobley.
That's where Kevin Love has fallen to now. He's not a starting caliber player no more.
He's like one of the most expensive bench players I've ever seen at $31.3 million.
Fair enough. But but with Evan Mobley with Cleveland, I like how he's able to play power forward. Because you guys got Jared Allen and his body's not really ready to play center. It's kind of funny because Jared Allen isn't that big either. He's kind of slant, a little slim. But Jared Allen will be able to take like that big man responsibilities and kind of take the bigger, like, what would you call it? Like big guy responsibilities off of Evan Mobley's shoulders a little bit, so he can come into his frame a little bit more. So I like that fit. That's also why I think a lot of Pistons fans liked his fit with the Pistons too, because Isaiah Stewart's another guy who would allow him to play at power forward. I think it, as long as you have a center like that who can take some of that responsibility off his shoulders and let him like kind of grow into his body, then it's a pretty good fit. And also, I think he's extremely talented. So I think in a few years he could be being talked about as, honestly, I said this before the draft, I was a little confused how Jalen Green just like all of a sudden just jumped over him in the draft. I don't know why that happened. I mean, Jalen Green could end up being better, but I always thought that Evan Mobley was supposed to be like the second prospect. So I was confused when that happened, that Jalen Green just all of a sudden was so much better than Evan Mobley. But yeah, I like Evan Mobley in Cleveland.
I'm glad you're an Evan Mobley truther. I am one as well. And Chris is too. He's editing the podcast. I'm sure he's nodding his head in agreement. But let's jump ahead here. So we'll go. This is going to be tough. Let's do Sadiq Bey versus Isaac Okoro. Who would you rather have?
I'll take Sadiq. I think Sadiq is like one of those guys who's like a 10 plus year starter in the NBA simply because he has like a base level. Like my big thing for him, and I've said this many times, the listeners from the Locked On Pistons is going to get tired of hearing this from me, but I'm going to keep saying it. I feel like his comparison, what he should be aiming to become, and they're not somewhat, they don't have the same build kind of, that one, this guy's way more athletic than Sadiq, whatever, but they play the same type of roles, and it's Mikal Bridges.
Yeah.
Like if he can become Mikal Bridges, a guy who's just really perfects his game of outside shooting, coming off pin downs and catching shooting and shooting off the move and stuff like that, and then being a good defender, he has that base level to be like a 10 plus year starter in the NBA, like a role player for starting playoff teams like right now. So I just feel like that kind of player is really viable, especially in today's NBA. So I take Sadiq Bey, even though Sadiq Bey is a little bit older than Isaac Okoro right now, I believe he's like, what is he, 2 years older than right now? Yeah, 2 years older.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still take Sadiq. I think Sadiq has a more guaranteed floor of being a starter in the NBA because of his role, and a little bit of a what would I say, a more confident ceiling that you think he can reach.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. Sadiq, I like a lot because he, like you said, he has like you can put a pin on his skill set. You know what his package and his abilities are going to be. I think the Mikal Bridges comparison is a really smart one, but I think a lot of this hinges on Okoro's shot heading into next year. And I'm a firm believer that the Cavs can fix it. So I'm going to take Okoro on this one just because of the defensive upside, because of how big he is. His ability to defend 2-3 already is promising. He can eventually defend 1-3, or sorry, not 2-3, 1-3, and eventually 1-4 as well. And like, I think it says a lot because JB Bickerstaff is a coach that isn't known to be to play his rookies that often. I think his hand is a little forced in this situation in Cleveland, but from the offset, like, Isaac drew the defensive assignment of every team's best player on every single night. Granted, against the Nets, it was a little tougher because he would take turns defending Harden, Durant, and Kyrie, but, like, he had to defend LeBron James. He had to defend Giannis one night. He had to defend so many different players on a night-to-night basis, and he was up to the challenge of the opportunity. I think that speaks volumes about his defensive upside. And again, I just think his jump shot mechanics aren't totally broken. There's a good baseline. There's a good package there. I think Cleveland's shooting staff and player development staff can refine it a little bit. But I think I'd take Isaac here just because there's a little bit more upside because he's 20. I think the playmaking stuff is really intriguing. If he ends up being like a Mikal Bridges type player, that'd be fun too. But I don't really want to put a cap on him because Isaac Okoro is a bit of a mystery box for me.
But yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense that makes sense if you're looking at it from a future ceiling perspective. Because I've said many times I think that Sadiq's ceiling is a bit capped. I don't think he'll ever be like a playmaker kind of guy. I don't think he can ever be like a guy can ISO or be a pick and roll ball handler. Like, I just don't believe that that's ever going to be in his game. Although I think that if he perfects the things I said he should perfect, he can still easily like Mikal Bridges does. Mikal Bridges doesn't do much else, but he's perfected everything that he's good at to where he's like, I believe, like a top 65 player in the NBA. I mean, you could probably, some people may even argue higher, but I think there's a baseline to Sadiq becoming like that. But I think Okoro definitely does have more potential in other areas to become more of a versatile player than Sadiq could, even though I still take Sadiq, but I do see how if you're going off potential, you can take Okoro because he does have more things to work with, more tools to work with.
No, absolutely. All right, jumping ahead, Isaiah Stewart versus Jared Allen. I'm going to take Jared Allen on this one because it depends on how you feel about Colin Sexton. I know I get a little flack for this sometimes, but I think Allen's the best player in Cleveland's young core right now just because he's the most established player. But there's still some upside there because he's so young, and I still think he has room to grow, especially physically. Like, he can get bigger. I think that's one of his biggest priorities this offseason is hopefully getting bigger. But maybe there's just some upside there as a playmaker. There is some upside there as him as a shooter. He took threes in Cleveland, but I think I'd take Allen over Isaiah Stewart at this point.
Yeah, Pistons fans are going to hate me for this, but I mean, I'm just being objective. I'm taking Jared Allen, too. I think Jared Allen's obviously better right now. I think he's a really damn good player too. It's not like he's better right now, barely. Like, he's really damn good player. Pistons fans know I really like the rim rolling lob threat who causes a bunch of gravity in that type of sense, and also is capable of protecting the rim on the other end. And that's something Jared Allen can do. And I also have seen him start to like try to expand his game offensively a little bit. I just don't think that I once again, let me make sure all Pistons fans know this, because they get a type of way when I say anything negative about the young core. I really like Isaiah Stewart. I think Isaiah Stewart's going to be pretty good in the NBA. However, I just don't think that he's better than Jared Allen right now. One, two, you can possibly make the argument, I guess, if you want to, Pistons fans, that Isaiah Stewart could have a higher ceiling because he's already starting to shoot threes. But I don't think you have to shoot threes to have more potential become a better player. Like, I think Jared Allen simply becoming even better at what he's already good at would maintain him being a really damn good player for a very long time. So I think Jared Allen's the pick here. I'd be shocked if Pistons fans would get mad at me over that one. I think that one should be clear. I'm not going to lie. If Pistons fans get mad at me over Jared Allen over Isaiah Stewart, we need to have a conversation. I don't know.
That's the beauty of this podcast network, because if we need to have a conversation, I'll hop on and we'll have a therapy sesh for Pistons fans. So this is going to be a bit of a cop-out, but I'm trying to keep it like position to position matchup, and I don't want to disrespect like the likes of Frank Jackson or Hamidou Diallo, but I think I'd take Colin Sexton safely over both of them. So Killian's going to get compared to both of these guys one at a time. Would you rather have Killian Hayes or Darius Garland? I think I'd take Darius.
I think Darius is probably better right now, but I'm still taking Killian because I think Killian, I'm just so high on Killian's ceiling now after going back and watching his tape and going back and watching his season and breaking down some stuff. And the fact that you can already see, I don't know if you saw him in summer league, he's already put on like 20 pounds. He looks big as hell. He's strong as hell now. That was one of the question marks coming into the draft, whether he could transform his body and get stronger or whatever. He's already the dude's jacked now. It's crazy. But I'm just I'm just so high on Killian's ceiling. I think he can become a really great player. And I think that's something I'm it's hard. Basically, I'll take Killian.
No, I get it.
I'll take Killian.
See, I'm not a fan of smaller point guards, especially what Cleveland's doing with two smaller guards in their backcourt. And I like bigger players with huge wingspans like Killian Hayes, but like you said, Darius is the better established player right now. Like, Killian had a pretty devastating injury to his rookie season, and my complaint with Darius now is he can't stay healthy in his first 2 years, but in his rookie season, he showed a lot of like flashes of potential as a primary creator on offense and as a shot taker and maker, and just like his stretchiness from the perimeter and the fact that he's showing confidence in his 3-point shot just gives me a lot of hope. I just think it's now the Cavs have to figure out what they're going to do with this Sexland backcourt, because I think the experiment's going to have the plug pulled on it soon. I'm not sure when it will happen, but I just don't think it's sustainable, because like if you look at Portland, that's who they're trying to model it after. Now they're pivoting to like copying Phoenix and Atlanta, but we'll see what happens. So to jump ship again, Killian versus Colin Sexton, I'd take Colin on this one, and I think it's a pretty easy one, because just in terms of his package, Colin is a 3-level scorer and he doesn't have a cap to him, and I'm intrigued to see what he does next. Like, I think the next step for him offensively is to take more threes. And I've gathered that's what he's been working on this offseason, just to refine his shot profile a little bit, so he's not attacking the paint so much. But I mean, he's added so much to his game. Like, in his rookie season, he drew comps to Eric Bledsoe, which is like the funniest thing because of his wingspan and his defensive ability at Alabama. But like, Colin's such a bad defender now. And he didn't take threes in Alabama, but now he became a 3-point shooter in his rookie season. And then in his sophomore season, he started drawing contact to get to the free throw line. He started establishing that more in his third season as well. I think the next step for him is taking more threes. I don't know what his limit is, but I'd take him over Killian.
Yeah, I would take Colin over Killian right now too, even though I want to continue to say that I'm so high on Killian's ceiling that I think he could eventually become better than Colin Sexton. Like, that's how high I am on Killian. If he's able to get his 3-point shot together, or even get better, if he's able to get one of these two things better, I think he could become better than Colin Sexton, because I think he has more to his overall game already. Like, he's a good defender, he's a really good playmaker. I think those two areas are something Colin Sexton struggles at. So if he's able to add one of these other things, just become really good, I think he could become better than Colin Sexton. So it's either his 3-point shot or his ability to absorb contact around the rim. If he's able to do that and like draw fouls and stuff, I think he could become better than Colin Sexton. But that's a lot. I feel like those are things that's a heavy ask to have a player. Like, a lot of guys, you say these things, it's like, oh yes, it's one thing. Not really. Like, it takes a lot to improve these areas, and a lot of players, frankly, just don't do it. So I'll take Colin Sexton right now as well, but I'll continue to say that I think Killian could possibly become better than him if he actually improves in these areas.
Well, if you were to merge Detroit and Cleveland together, I think you'd have number one on this list, is from what I gathered.
100%. I'll maintain that I think Cleveland 100% should be on this list. I'm more confident in Cleveland being on this list than Pistons, I'm not going to lie, because I feel like that you guys have three guys who have early established along with the top pick coming in. I don't really get how you guys aren't on the list.
Well, you know, flattery will get you everywhere with Cavs fans, so I'm sure they'll be hitting you up pretty soon. Speaking of, Koo, tell everyone at home where they can find you. Tell them to check out Locked On Pistons, obviously, like I am right now. But yeah, let everyone know at home where they can find you.
So yeah, obviously, check me out on Locked On Pistons, just like you find Locked On Cavs everywhere on your podcast platforms. You can also find me on Twitter at CougarHillNBA. I believe I am 12 followers away from 4.9K. So go ahead and go follow me over there if you don't already, because I'm getting close to 5K. I'm trying to break that point. But outside of that, you can also find me on YouTube at Cougs Ballroom. You can also find me at Detroit Bad Boy, find articles about the Pistons. So yeah, those are the places you can find me. Appreciate you having me on here doing this crossover. This was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, man. This was a ton of fun. And like Koo said, check him out on Locked On Pistons. Check him out wherever you find his work. Give him a follow on Twitter. Let's get him to 5K by this time next week, because this will be dropping later in the week for us on Locked On Cavs. But until next time, Chris will be joining me again soon. Hope you guys enjoyed a audio format episode. You can subscribe to us on YouTube. Hit that notification bell if you do, so whenever we post a video, you know it goes live. You can find us anywhere you can find your podcast, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it. Odyssey as well, big one there. If it's Apple, give us a 5-star review. We'll do a better job of reading those and giving you shout outs before the show. But until next time, have a good weekend, stay safe, and go Cavs.